Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I've had one too many cigarettes burning up my lungs. Had the taste of one too many lips hanging off my tongue. Oh, oh, oh. Sunday morning getting high, drinking here alone. Thinking up a brand new alibi for not coming home. Oh, oh.
People who, like the founder of the show, recognize that they are on a dangerous path and make a difficult adjustment to be an amazing person. Share poems that reveal the duality of our vulnerability and strength. Capture the internal battle of the demon and angel on your shoulder. Deep poetry, thoughtful commentary, and fun chatter. For sinners, saints, and everyone in between. This is part sinner, part saint, which is part of Late Night Poets on allpoetry.com. You don't have to be in our group to participate, but it's more fun if you are, because you can comment along in the chat. I'm Aphasiana, and my co-host Babbler is trying to log in. I see her pop in and out and in and out, so she will be coming, and she is just trying to get in. I see you, Babbler. Okay. Keep trying, lady. Today we are going to go over a few carryovers from last week's contests, and we have a new contest, so we'll explain the prompts as we go. Hello, Pee-wee. I see you on the board there. And here's Babbler again. Yay. Oh, she's gone. Okay. I have an idea. One moment as I try to connect with our lovely co-hostess. I'm going to call her since she's having trouble calling us. Sorry for the delay. There is going to be amazing poetry tonight, I promise you. Babbler. Oops. Hello, Babbler, is that you? Babbler? Am I back? All right. Sorry about that. Failed attempt to get our co-host back in. So I'm going to start with a poem and hopefully we'll bring Babbler on momentarily. Okay, so we're going to start with our carryovers. And here's one of the carryovers from the double prompt, which had a very tricky word bank. And this one is by Sandy G. New Year's morning, heard of a stomach womble, followed by wrenching in my gut and spinning of the ceiling, suffering from severe dyspnea and possibly capital crapulence. I woke up rather late, killer pain smack dab in my glabula. Must have been a doozy of a party. That arm sky of my jacket, rudely torn wide open, silken sleeve quite unattached. My feet were without socks. I staggered for a drink, stepped upon an agraffe, injuring the lovely minimus at the end of my left doggy, banged my columna nasi on the top of my spigot, found the Russian vodka, took a healing drink or two, put on a cup of coffee, my head too thick to think, heard an urgent call to nature, and threw up in the sink. End poem. Oh, Sandy G, I think that that was perfect for the prompt. It used all of the words properly. It had that wonderful sense of humor. It really captured it. Babbler, is that you now?
Yes, I think so.
Yay!
I don't know.
We have Babbler.
Part of me is like, if I just keep calling, is it going to be annoying? Constantly long enough for you to hit the unmute button? Oh, I don't know why.
But you're here now.
I am.
I don't know. Even when I called you, a disconnect. I was hoping that if I was the caller, it would be smoother. But no.
Yeah, I saw that. I heard you just long enough to be like, "Babbler, is that you?" And then click. No. Oh, I don't know. This time when I called in, I disabled everything. So I turned my Wi-Fi off my phone. I turned my Bluetooth off. I'm like, everything's off and disabled. So maybe that's it. And then I can do that every time and not have to deal with it, maybe. I don't know. Figured it was worth trying.
It is. It's the key to tech. Shut off everything that you can. Were you able to hear the poem?
I was not.
Sorry.
I did not hear it. I heard, like, the last couple stanzas. So I'll go ahead and let you comment, and then I'll try and read it real quick, if that works. Unless you've already
said
what you wanted to say.
I think that Sandy did a wonderful job at using the words, combining them. Like, for me, one of the hardest words to use was glabella, and I thought that it combined well with the killer pain from the party. The arm sky, rudely torn wide open, was great. And the idea of combining hurting your minimus with the agraphy was really smart. This was a clever use of all of the words. And it felt like that kind of stumbly morning where once one thing goes wrong, everything else does too. It was realistic.
Yeah, I just read it. It's beautifully comedic. Like, it takes all of the words and takes them, like, the silliness of it, you know, because they're kind of complicated words. They're not necessarily, like, inherently comedic, but because they are a little more complicated than your normal words, you know, they're not your typical, like, if somebody started talking to you like this, you know, you'd wonder, what the heck? But putting them all together about talking about, like, a late night, you know, drinking, New Year's morning, so, you know, spent New Year's Eve getting quite plastered, and the fallout of that was funny. And just the way the words were used to be, like, almost overly technical is, like, borderline nauseating, which I think really works well with the piece. I particularly liked that it refers to their foot as the left doggy, because it kind of just feeds into that, like, silliness, you know, the feet without socks, you know, stubbing a toe, you know. I like that it's called a doggy and not just called, like, my foot, you know. I thought it was wonderful. I liked how the humor was kind of put into this, you know. Ends with barfing in the sink, as all good poetry should. Please don't only submit me poems about vomiting in the sink.
Yeah, be careful what you say. You never know what kind of response you're going to get there, Babbler.
But I enjoyed the writing part. It was well done.
Last night I was talking with a few people from All Poetry, and it was funny because we were talking about accents, because we were all from different parts of, well, most of us different parts of North America, but there was also some people from New Zealand, and actually I guess that was all, but we also know people from other continents. So we were just talking about how everyone has a really distinct accent, and that, like, each of us has an accent. It's not like there's this otherness of accent. It was like everyone has an accent to someone else. And they were Fallon was listing, like, all the different accents that people had. And then when she got to me, she was like, and obviously for aphasiana, and I'm expecting her to say Canadian, and she's like, nerd. And I'm like, what? And she's like, you're so proper. And I'm like, no, I'm not. But I have a nerd accent. So I was thinking about that because of the fancy words in the poem, my unusual prompt choices. And I was just like, yep, my nerd accent is coming out in this poem because I chose those words. Anyway, Babbler, would you please read the poem by Sam Sampson?
Absolutely. This is Scrawl the New Me by Sam Sampson. Through the open window, the petrichor overpowers my nose. Pressing fingertips to eyes, phosphenes dance as I find myself feeling a sense of dysania this morning. Such a strange feeling for me, a morning person, as if I had been remade. Someone took off their griffinage and scrawled a new me that I cannot read. I fall back to sleep with the hope that overmorrow I will be whole again. End poem.
Ooh, I love this one. I really enjoy how it definitely used both of my prompts. So the one prompt had been the word choices, but the secondary prompt was, I have this strange feeling that I'm not myself anymore. It's hard to put into words, but I guess it's like I was fast asleep and someone came and disassembled me and hurriedly put me back together, that sort of feeling, which was by Harukumi Murakami. And I think that they really captured this by using the words. So griffinage was one of the words, and it was like unrecognizable, illegible writing. And I love the idea of someone writing about you in a way that creates you, but scrawled in a way that you can't read, so you don't even know yourself because you haven't been able to take on this knowledge of who the new you is. The way that it uses the different senses, with the smells and the way that the phosphenes influence the vision. It's awesome, but I especially like the use of the griffinage to explain how different they felt. Excellent metaphor there.
Yeah, I also enjoyed this piece. Scrawling a new me, to wake up and smell, the rain on pavement as like just the starter, and then to like press your eyes and just feel really out of it in the morning. I am not a morning person, like at all. Not at all. If you leave me to my own devices, I may not get up in any time that says AM. I am groggy. And so, I feel pretty out of it just about every morning. not necessarily remade, maybe, as in, like, tossed together remnants of hot garbage. But I like the idea of waking up and just feeling out of it, because that's basically how I feel just about every morning. And the idea of just going back to sleep and just being like, I'm going to sleep for, like, a whole day and a half and see how I feel after that. Like, maybe I'll feel more like a human. For me, that usually happens about 2 p.m., 3 p.m. I start to feel human again. I mean, to be fair, I don't usually go to bed till like 3 in the morning. I usually feel pretty human then, but I just need to sleep. So maybe this is a little bit of a story of me every single day, except I can't go back to sleep for a day and a half, although sometimes I feel like I wish I could. But I like the idea of just like feeling off in the morning, only because I relate to it quite a bit. I usually feel off in the morning. So I thought this was a nice brevity. Yeah,
I agree.
Nice job.
Great too. Brevity. And I also hate mornings. It was my day off today and I did not get up until 1 p.m., which was like when my husband was coming home from work. So I'm like, I am such a lazy bum. But
why not?
Yeah. All right. Our next poem is by Pee Wee Cousin, who is on the board listening. Hello, Pee Wee. This is Phosphemes and Fun with Alliteration. Phosphate flowing, phonetically faking, fantastic, and feeble flights of fantasy, feeling residually resounding, rhetorical cries of lies. Phosphorescent, phosphenes dance and sing, several equative occasions when you close your eyes. Eyes closed and the nose knows no place to go. Rhinoplasty often lighting little loads of luminescence, loftily longing lustily to be living lavishly or lividly in the lunar skies. Oh, Phosphine's complete the discreet, discretionary dancing duo do, though it doesn't deem duly disillusioned deities, unrefined under undulating tides. Quite the opposite, really. Realistically and categorically undefined is he. End poem.
Well, I really enjoyed this. It went crazy with the alliteration, but that was kind of given to you in the title, Phosphines and Fun with Alliteration. I particularly like that Phosphines and Fun is alliterative, but it's not the same letters. It's phonetically alliterative. So I thought that was a fun way to kind of start, you know. And then I like that it all makes sense. You know, like phosphate flowing frenetically, faking fantastic and feeble flights of fantasy. You know, it literally is talking about, like, what you see when you push on your eyes. You know, like, that's what's happening. You know, and then continue it and just kind of go into that sensation of what happens when you close your eyes and what you see. And then, interestingly, it goes into, like, a nose job. You know, eyes closed and the nose knows no place to go. Rhinoplasty, often lighting little loads of luminescence. So I thought that was kind of interesting, like to take it into more of a smell direction after a vision direction, but it's not even really a smell because it's like you can't smell, you know, just because it makes me wonder if when you get a nose job, if you lose sense of smell. I don't imagine you do, but I guess it's possible. Or you'd lose maybe some sense of it. Just kind of raises questions for me. And then it jumps back into the closed eyes, which I really enjoyed also, you know. And I like the idea that you can't define it either, because you can't. It's almost like... you can't follow it. It doesn't make any kind of shape. Although sometimes, I don't know if you could, like, anyone else saw, like, the visualization of fractals that were, like, really popular in the 90s, where it just kept zooming, like, in or out. Sometimes it reminds me of that. But I enjoyed the piece. You know what it reminded me of is, like, Blackalicious's Alphabet Aerobics. The way the words bounce along and there's so much alliteration. It doesn't, you know, follow that alphabet pattern, obviously. It does not like an alphabetical order, but just the way the words flow, because there's a distinct rhythm and speed to it. So I thought this was really fun. I thought it was interesting. It was fun to read, and it wasn't completely nonsensical. You know, you didn't give into phonetics, you know, completely overpowering saying anything. That is the one thing that I think rhyming and alliteration can sometimes create a trap for, is, you know, like, oh yeah, it sounds great, it's really fun to hear, but it means nothing, it's like meaningless. So, but this still retains the meaning of what those phosphines are and what that sensation is like. So I appreciated the write, Pee-wee. Your thoughts, Louisiana?
I thought it was really fun to read out loud, as alliteration tends to be. It's something that flows out loud better than on the page. And I agree with you that it's cool that the alliteration happens with words that don't start with the same letter, just the same sounds. That makes it extra fun. The rhinoplasty part made me surprised that he didn't make use of the other word that was on the prompt list, the columella nasi, the space between your nostrils. That was a perfect place to stick that word in there. I don't know. I thought this was really fun. Great vocabulary in this. The phosphorescent, rhinoplasty, luminescence, There's some really great word choices in here, like beyond the difficult words that I challenged people to use. So it was very fun. Thank you, Pee-wee. I enjoyed reading it. That was the last one from that contest carryover. We do have three carryovers from the contest that we did the next week, which was the art of Sarah B. Sid B. Sid B. And one of the ones that was carried over was mine. So I'm going to put that up. And here we go. Violet's mother. Remnants of a fallen mother of nature remains rooted in community, Violet's mother, by Aphasiana. Remnants of a fallen mother of nature remains rooted in community, absorbing the worries of youth as beauty rests upon her, taking on sorrow's shadows as purple paints tomorrow. End poem.
Lovely read. I really like the tie into purple at the end. The remnants of the fallen mother of nature being the tree stump that she's resting her head on, you know, and that it's still there and it's still like part of the natural scene. But without, you know, like a mother without guidance, there's kind of this grief that I thought was well done. And then just as purple paints tomorrow, really, I think part of the reason I like it so much is because it gives nod to the fact that most of the tones in this painting are purple. You know, your brain kind of fills in the colors that aren't purple as non-purple, but if you were to actually look at, like, the colors that are used in this, it is, like, 95% purple. Like, the skin is actually purple. The dress is purple. The sky is purple. The clouds are purple. The flowers are purple. Most of the tree stump is even purple. You know, your brain sometimes, as someone who paints, when you start actually looking at the colors that are used in paintings to make up all of the different tones, there's no, like, they didn't just use skin color, you know, at least not in watercolor. That's really not how it's done. You use just about every color to make up a painting. And sometimes when you're going for certain hues like this, you really use, like, a lot of one color. You know, I find when I'm painting skin tones, I use a lot of blue, a lot of blue, a lot of violet. I didn't really realize until I actually started looking at what colors I use. And so I like that you really picked up on how much of this painting is actually purple, because it's a lot of it. But I also like what you say in here. I mean, it's a brevity, you know, and it's like without the past. You know, it's like the loss of a parent. You know, they're not completely gone. Like, you're still affected by them because they still raised you, still brought you up, still, you know, you as a narrator or humanity. And now, even though they're gone, it's not like all trace of their existence is permanently gone because people have effects on what happens around them. But, you know, there's grief at loss. So I really enjoyed your write. I thought it was a great brevity. Well done. Anything you want to add?
I'm just going to say that this was to the picture of the stump where the girl is lying on it, and it is kind of what I referred to last week as the jack-o'-lantern face on the stump, where the stump looks sad. So just in case people are listening and not reading along, that they can't see the picture. It is a sad-looking girl wearing purple shiny dress leaning on a stump. That was the context of it.
That's what I'm talking about. Yes, it is attached to the piece, but if you aren't looking at it, there's an art piece that is inspired. That inspires the write. I'm not just making up my own painting in my head.
She's painting as I read and just, like, being like, oh, it was nice of you to make it all purple. And I'm like, that was you. No.
This goes great with my bizarre fictional imaginings. No. It really painted a picture in my mind. Yeah, no. But I enjoyed it.
Thank you. There's one now by My Angel 3, which is to the same painting. So, Babbler, would you give that a read, please?
Absolutely. This is God Stained by My Angels 3. She was God stained and hell made. Her sparkle bore a weight of shame. She was storm drenched and sun dried, raging rivers and calming tides. She knew feral and she knew swoon, laughed and cried beneath full moon. She had angel eyes with demonic hues, angry scars under winged tattoos. She yearned in isolation, but flinched at thoughts of adoration. She danced to music no one cared for, and sobbed to films about trust. She spoke fondly of the devil's tooth, but lilies adorned her prayer books. She floated around her own loneliness, a tranced moth to her own flame. She screamed her anger at the oceans, but whispered sorrow to the breeze. She wore shoes to match expectations and a smile to cover hobbled pain. She walked like nothing ever mattered and crawled when something did. End poem.
Oh, that was beautiful. Great read, Babbler. And I think this is a fantastic poem. It really brings a character to life. I liked she yearned to be touched in isolation, but flinched at the thought of adoration. There's this thing about, like, you know, when you're by yourself, you wish that you weren't, and yet the idea of someone wanting you can be intimidating, especially if you've been mistreated in the past. Having that kind of, like, fear of being admired. You know, you don't want to be so pretty you get attention, but you also don't want to be invisible. There's that kind of confusion of not knowing what you want, because nothing feels quite right. Where is it now? She screamed her anger at the ocean. She whispered sorrow to the breeze. It uses the different elements and connects to everything, because there's the flame. She's entranced to the flame. She has so many different connections to the land. But the idea that she's wearing shoes to match the expectations, I think it's not just about the expectations of others, but it's like the expectations of what she's going to feel. The ending is so powerful. Walked like nothing ever mattered and crawled when something did. It feels like there's a lot of strength to this woman in the story, and it was expressed really uniquely. Those angry scars under winged tattoos, I can imagine that. This is wonderful, My Angel 3. What did you think, Babbler?
I really liked it, too. You know, that first couplet, you know, she was God-stained and hell-made, her sparkle bore a weight of shame, made me think of it as like a nod to the theme of our show. You know, to be both part, you know, touched by God and part, you know, tell me, you know, imperfect person, you know, both, you know, holy and not, just fully human. I also really liked that next couplet, you know, the storm drenched and sun dried. It's like a cycle, you know, to just be drenched by the storm and then dried out by the sun. Seem like, you know, different kinds of emotions. It makes me think of, I don't cry very often. It's probably been like over a year since I've cried. But when I do, and I actually kind of enjoy it because it's really cathartic, you know, to really cry and and get it all out. And then I just feel, I feel done. Like, I sleep really hard. I just feel it completely used up. And that's what it makes me think of, you know, is that kind of contraposition of emotion there. You know, the raging rivers and the calming tides. It's just the, that breadth of feeling I really enjoyed. And it kind of goes out and it talks about, like, this juxtaposition of a person, you know, the things that can seem oppositional but aren't, you know, like you pointed out with the touched in isolation but flinched at thoughts of adoration. Reminds me of, like, when I was a teenager, you know, I didn't get much attention at home, really, and I didn't have a whole lot of friends. And I wanted friends. I wanted to be liked. But at the same time, my exterior was pretty gruff as a self-defense mechanism, you know, because anytime someone tried to talk to me or, like, befriend me, I'd be like, what do you want? You know, like, why are you talking to me? Because for some reason I always assumed that, like, if someone's talking to me, they wanted something from me. You know, I was very suspicious. So it makes me think of that, you know, like, how sometimes someone's exterior doesn't really match, you know, the image that they give off. And just, you know, the dichotomy that can be encompassed in a single person. And then, of course, those last two couplets, you know, the wearing shoes to match expectations and a smile to cover hobbled pain is, you know, trying to be somebody. That's what the world expects you to see and expects you to be, and trying to, like, fit in and just not, you know, but masking that. And then the walking like nothing ever happened is, you know, nothing ever mattered, is being like, I got this, nothing, it's not a big deal, it's not a big deal, like disappointment after disappointment. And then, you know, like basically getting home and or getting to the point where things matter so much that you can't even stand on your own feet anymore, to just kind of be taken down by it, and feeling both of those things at the same time. You know, putting the brave face on for the world while you crumble inside. It's kind of what it makes me think of, you know, those masking a lot of pain and pretending to be okay. I really liked this. I thought it was beautifully done and really gives character to the art and paints a really beautiful story. I love the juxtaposition in each of these couplets. I think it's a wonderful use of them. I also love how there's quite a few off rhymes in here as well. You know, it's got sun-dried and tied, swoon and moons, hues, tattoos, isolation, adoration. They don't all rhyme or have off rhymes, but a lot of them do. And I think that gives the piece a little bit more flow. And it makes it feel almost a little bit magical. So I really enjoyed this piece. I thought it was really well done. Nice job, Angel 3.
Excellent comment. Babbler is the queen of comments. And I think I'm going to depend on you for commenting on this next one, because Peter always blows my mind. So Peter Solway wrote this, and it's to the artist of that last prompt, the one with the girl crying on the stump, but it's to her art in general. So many of her other paintings that we looked at were about women in the snow, and they kind of like blended in, like they became the water or creatures. And he didn't specify which painting in particular, but his title is Miss Chill. Cool and beautiful, swim by at noon, my mermaid of longing, harness and pipe left by one, some sort of employment to attend. Bereft, hashness victim, wolves of whitewash, afternoon desperate in supplication, sublimation, Belgium linen requiring sizing, trying anything short of bronze bell ringing, pulling and pollocking. a simile's fucked, lusting for the real thing. Coke and the afternoon off, naked as marble, goats in the gallery, but gods of hashish to decree, tube to squeeze, thought to please. Love a whole garden block of Everest, still awaiting her return. Lean tail, the touch of heaven, artist Sir Rubens to sketch without charcoal. But work calls, muse to earn an income. Never a wedding, motel honeymoon, waste hot water, hammering in wanton steam. Eternal love down the drain, facts of time, never again, snow on slippery afternoons. Repeating my glum refrain, Joni Mitchell, a sad example. King Kong of getting along, building to climb, cities of disappointment, fondling her little nipples, my last from the deep, late for that afternoon shift. End poem.
Enjoyed the write. There was some really interesting... there was a really interesting storyline kind of going on, you know, this mermaid of longing, hashish and pipe, left by one some sort of employment to attend. It makes me think that Miss Chill here, this woman, it's not so much about the woman as it is about the hash pipe, and just the letting go of responsibility, like knowing you need to be somewhere. Knowing you need to be at work, but just screwing around and getting high instead is kind of what I get out of it. You know, cool and beautiful, swim by it nude, my mermaid of longing, hashish pipe left by one, some sort of employment to attend. You know, afternoon desperate in supplication, sublimation, Belgium linen requiring sizing, you know, just... like, just kind of messing around. Try anything short of bronze bell ringing, pulling and pollocking. Pollock, I believe, here a reference to Jackson Pollock, and is kind of very intentional, mindful chaos. You know, facsimiles fucked, lusting for the real thing. So just getting tired of being fucked, you know, fake, like just wanting to... you know, the experience reality for a minute. And it makes me think of people who work like in a customer service job, you know, like, hi, how are you doing? Are you finding everything okay? Let me know if you, you know, just needing a moment from that bullshit, is kind of what I get from that. You know, coke and an afternoon off. You're just not doing this. Like, I'd rather stay home. And like get high and be butt naked, you know, and just enjoy, life. You know, artist Sir Rubens being known for, doing paintings and sketches of larger people, you know, not today really what we'd consider fat people, you know, but that's where like Rubenesque comes from. He has very chubby people in most of his art, you know, bigger but sensual. I don't know if I'm phrasing this right, but you know what I mean. And so it makes me think of that again. So it's just kind of painting this picture of what this person might look like. And then, you know, then it says, but work calls, muse to earn an income, never a wedding, motel honeymoon, waste hot water, hammering in wanton steam, like... even this has to be a quickie because reality is knocking, you know, like you do actually have to go back to work, responsible adult, even if you take an afternoon off, you know, eternal love down the drain, facts of time, never again. Like, it basically to me just says back to, reality and the sad reality that humanity has painted for itself, you know, which is, you know, work, eat, sleep, repeat. You know, King Kong of getting along, buildings to climb, cities of disappointment, fondling her little nipples, my last from the deep, late for that afternoon shift. The last from the deep, I think, being referential to the beginning and the mermaid, the hash pipe. You know, that's what it says to me. I could be completely wrong, but to me it seems like escapism from responsibility for an afternoon. But I enjoyed it. I thought it was well done. There's some wonderful references in there. I wish one day he would give us a thorough explanation of what he means, one of these. So, what were your thoughts, Viviana?
I think you summed it up pretty well. You picked out my favorite part, which was the pulling and pollocking, because I did think that that was really clever, the way that he used Pollock's name in there, like turning into a verb, but clearly referencing the artist. He has a way of bringing artistic, like visual art into his writing in really fun ways. He definitely captured that kind of lazy afternoon feeling of wanting to be just hanging out with a lady and not having to be responsible, that procrastination. And where is it now? I've lost my spot. But, I mean, basically, he does capture that lazy afternoon desire to just be naked and relax and not have to be responsible. That it has that artistic kind of free spirit feel that is fun, with just like a little bit of kind of sensuality in there and some good references. And it's just, it's classic Peter, you know. It's smart, and it's a little bit obscure, where I don't totally get all of the references, but it has some definite fun parts. I liked the King Kong of getting along, building to climb cities of disappointment. You know, he takes kind of a fun reference and turns it into something meaningful, and that's what he's skilled at. Well done, Peter. So that was the end of the carryovers. We are on to the next contest. So this is based on, it's kind of like a self-help movement. Not normally my thing, but I have a friend who was doing it, and it's called Life on Purpose. And it's been going well for her. She seems like, it's like if you're having a bit of an identity crisis, midlife crisis maybe, something like that, figuring out like what's important to you and, you know, reestablishing yourself, grounding yourself. It's kind of a minimalist type thing as well, very nature-based. So I just liked some of the quotes that she was posting. I haven't done the whole book or all of the worksheets that she's been doing, but I'm enjoying the quotes that she's been posting. So I picked a couple of them as prompts, and that was inspiration for the poetry we're about to hear. The first prompt is, how liberating it is to pursue wholeness instead of perfection, which was said by Morgan Harper Nichols on the Life on Purpose blog. Babbler, would you please read the poem by Adrian? Adrian 41062.
Absolutely. Just realized I wasn't sure if I was on mute or not. I'm not. Okay. This is Searching by Adrian 41062. People always trying to strive for perfection, but they never reach. A moving target always eludes us. They fall apart when they overreach. On the other hand, look inside. Start by changing your inner self. Change your thinking and your actions. Here, you will find the greatest wealth. Wholeness brings deeper contentment, makes you feel happy and full of joy. I won't strive any more for perfection. I have inner peace none can destroy. End poem.
I think this poem really captured the spirit of the movement, of the idea that the living intentionally, the life on purpose. I don't know what to call it. Their group, I guess. They have this kind of sense of choosing to look inside and find this kind of peace. And I think that Adrian really captured the feel of that, realizing that, you know, seeking perfection is never going to fully get you there because nobody's perfect. And to look inside and focus on what you need and the best you can be, that gives you that strength. I think that he made this really come to life and work for him and stay true to the prompt. It had a really nice flow to it.
I agree. I think this does a really good job of embodying the theme, it seems like from this quote anyway, of the movement, you know, of it sounds like almost like meditatively existing and like accepting, not just accepting, but like embracing your flaws, you know, understanding yourself better and without judgment, kind of. You know, people aren't perfect. They just aren't. It's just intuitively being, you know, it's just part of being human. I mean, there's so many different idioms in the English language about it, you know, like, you know, to err is human, or there's even, human error is just like literally a thing that I can fill out on a form for like why mistakes happen. You know, it's nobody's perfect. Nobody. And so trying to be perfect is just an unreachable goal. And so deciding that you're not going to reach that goal and you're not going to seek perfection, you're instead just going to seek happiness. You know, you're going to accept yourself the way you are or fix the things that you can fix that are in your ability, you know, and not expect perfection from yourself. You know, I imagine that's probably pretty empowering, which is why, you know, it seems to be like a popular thing to do or a meaningful thing to do for some people. And I think this really does a good job of embodying that. It has a really nice rhyme scheme. It's got your classic, you know, every other line rhyming that I think works really well and gives us some nice structure. So, you know, it's funny. People used to ask me when I was young, like, what I wanted to be, and I wasn't really sure. I didn't really have a big direction. I just knew I didn't want to be poor. And not that I wanted to be, like, obscenely wealthy, but growing up really poor, I'd be like, you know, some of the things that other people consider basic needs, you know, like running water and consistent food and clean clothes were not things I had regular access to. So, you know, I would always just say, I just want to be content. Like, I want to learn how to not struggle with that every day, to wake up every morning and be happy with what I have, which is actually incredibly difficult to achieve. And there are some times where I'm very content with my life, and there are times where I'm very happy with my life, and there are other times that I am not. You know, and I feel like that kind of ebb and flow is kind of normal. I think that it's also just, you know, part of being human is having fluctuating levels of satisfaction with your life. But I like this piece, and I think it does a great job of embodying that message from the quote very well. So, well done, Adrian.
Great comment, Babbler. I like how you brought your life into it, and I think that it's it's you know, it is a difficult thing to feel content all the time, but I think that that's a good, it's a good goal, you know, just wanting to not have to struggle. And I think that's what part of this this movement is like, not, you know, kind of living for the retirement, like just like, you know, gonna work so hard so later I can enjoy it. It's about, like, you know, finding everyday contentment. And I liked the structure as well. I'm glad you pointed that out. The every second line rhyme puts less pressure on the rhyming, but still has that very kind of poetic feel to it. Our next poem to the same prompt is by Daniel Deschino, A Mischievous Challenge of the Dadaism Prism. Mischievous and mystery, trapped in mundane, domesty city, with the feel of the city's felicity, its plasticity and toxicity, they searched in stores for stories stored, and roared in accord when they found their reward. A mystic charm named simply Da, a clue found deep within anima. Calls from North America, so off they went to Ka-a-da. To guarantee a job well done, they did seek the help of Ed Montan. They called up old Cal Gary, and luckily Alberta was free. They walked and walked and talked till they unlocked what was blocked, and all were shocked who were not cocked. They now knew where the mythical Da was stored, was stocked. They planned at hand to add to their band the lovely and misunderstood misunderstand, and the rock-solid Prince Edward, who they do know is land. Now manned firsthand with this new expand, misunderstand scanned the band land, and though unplanned was this band land band, misunderstand now did command and understand they must expand to a newfound Newfoundland. And so they transferred to this place, past unheard where inferred was preferred that absurd little word, still unheard, the Da. They all desperately wanted to see concurred. And with glee he and she both agree, as to we, that the key to the plea I am free to decree is in all the words read at your local library. Although some are not words, as most words tend to be, like this poem has played with words that you see. End poem.
Well, here with this one, you get a little bit of a taste of what aphasiana meant by being careful what you ask for. I think I mentioned something about this being a mischievous in the last contest, and the adventures was mischievous, and so we have a little bit of that going on here. There is a lot of wordplay in this that is really fun. You know, you start out with mischievous and then Mr. E, and then domesticity and felicity, you know, as cities instead of words. I got to say my favorite is plasticity, where I picture the entire city being made out of plastic in my head. For some reason, white plastic. I don't know why. That's just what I envision. You know, and wandering around, getting out of these cities that are apparently boring, you know, because they're like fake happiness and domestics and plastic and toxic. And going and exploring for something called Da. Which, of course, you would find in Canada. And then all of their little helpers here being provinces, you know, Edmonton, Calgary, and Alberta. You know, places in Canada, and wandering around and looking for this DAW, which I really enjoy, and just getting really intense into this wordplay, and looking for it, you know, really committing, you know, misunderstand, scanned the band land, and though unplanned, this was this band land band, misunderstand, now did command, and understand that they must expand to a newfound Newfoundland. Obviously a play on Newfoundland being how that is spelled and the original meaning. You know, that is intense rhyming. And again, wordplay, you know, with misunderstand being a person and not misunderstand. It's hard to explain this and sound like I'm making sense. But it's really fun, you know, just this exploration looking for this DAW. I don't know where DAW came from. I'd love to hear what the inspiration is for searching for DAW. You know, based on the title here where it says Challenge of the Dadaism Prism, it made me think, oh, well, maybe this will be Dadaist. But, you know, Dadaism is based on, it's like very political, which I guess in this way you could take it as political, like a political map, but that's not usually the meaning of Dadaism. It's like a really avant-garde type of poetry that gets a bit senseless but has, you know, heavy political meaning. But I really enjoyed, like, just the bit of nonsensicalness of this. It does take it that way. And I guess if you're drawing political lines on a map, it works that way. But it's not its normal way that it works. But considering that there's now a normal way that Dadaism works, maybe it's, like, New Age Dadaism. Anyway, I enjoyed it. It was really fun to listen to. It's fun to read. And it's a clever little story. So, well done, Daniel. Your thoughts, Fiziana?
I think this was super fun. And I know it's hard to explain because when you're looking at it, it's really cool wordplay, but listening to me, people probably thought I was being super weird in my pauses. So if you're just listening, mischievous is not written like the word mischievous, as in, like, you know, looking for trouble. It's miss, M-S, dot, chievous. And then mystery is M-I-S-T-E-R, space. And same with all of the cities, domesticity, there's a space in between. So it's not domesticity, but it's obviously a word play on that. And the same with the cities, Ed Monton and Carol Gary. It's split up like their names, but it is the names of cities, or Alberta is the province. And he's just being very playful, and I know that this is because he's playing with me because I'm Canadian, and because we have this joke about mischievous. I think that's really clever. He sent me messages several times like, you don't have to read it. It's okay. I'm just being silly. But I thought it was fun, so I wanted to include it. I wasn't going to say no to this. I thought it was really playful and enjoyable. Clever. I think a lot of work goes into the silliness and the wordplay. It takes a lot of thought to be able to pull something like this off. Well done, Daniel.
Where are we off to now?
Now we have one by Ernest, and it's called Perfection. I think it's your turn to read.
It is, yes. I will open it up. This is Perfection by Ernest. It goes like this. There are some people that above all things have such a great desire to achieve the highest level for the excellence they show in every trait to reach perfection. And often they are seeing around them some persons that are always much acclaimed, which are accepted and promoted by the public and the whole community. But trying just to replicate a style, as popular and famous it might be, will always lead to simple imitations of better or lower quality. The only way to reach completeness and to live your life with all its qualities is when you are yourself with all your traits, accepting them to be the perfect you. End poem.
Thank you, Ernest, and also Babbler, for your wonderful reading of this. I think this is great. It talks about how seeking perfection, we tend to look at people who we consider to be better than ourselves, and trying to be them, we don't end up being our best selves because everyone has different strengths, and wanting to be just like someone who's really talented at something doesn't necessarily make you really talented at that. You have to find your own thing that you're great at. Not to say you don't have to try, because it's not just like accept yourself as you are and don't put any effort in. It's, you know, find what your traits are and expand on those. The only way to reach completeness is to live your life with all its qualities. We will always lead to simple imitations if we're trying to copy, and an imitation just isn't as exciting as something that's original. So I like the message of this. I liked the way it all came together. I thought it had a nice structure to it. Well done, Ernest. What do you think, Babbler?
I really liked it too, you know. I love that it starts out with there are some people that above all things, meaning the most important thing to them and their entire life is to be perfect. And that's all they strive for, and all that matters to them is this perfection. And they see people around them that appear to be perfect, and they feel like it's doable because everyone around them appears to be that way. But that's not the case. You know, the people that you revere and look around and see that appear to be perfect are actually exactly the same as you are. I don't know how many times I've explained this, like, to different people in different ways, but it's important to remember that most of social media is a highlight reel, okay? People aren't posting their shit days. You know, not most. I've seen some of that more recently, which is kind of refreshing, but at the same time exposing, you know. Most of what you see on Facebook or Instagram or TikTok or whatever social media platform you prefer are like the best moments of somebody's life. You know, you get the picture of them right after they spent an hour and a half doing their makeup. You get the photo of them and their kids looking cute and all dressed up. You get the picture of their new house, like, right after they cleaned it. You get, you know, and it all paints this story that says, hey, look at me, I'm perfect. You get it with celebrities, too. You know, you're not seeing their actual whole entire life. You're getting their highlight reel. You're getting their marketing. You're getting, you know, the persona they put out there to be consumed. And so to compare yourself to those things is, you know, your life looks comparatively mundane. You know, you look at all these pictures of all these people doing these really cool and exciting and fun things and having a good time, and you're like, well, I'm not having any good time. Well, I don't feel like I'm succeeding at life because look at what everyone else is achieving and I'm not accomplishing anything. No, this is their highlight reel. You know, they didn't post to you, like, things that are like, hey, I haven't been able to take a crap in 7 days. I need to go to the doctor for, like, my crazy constipation. Nobody's posting that story. You know, like, they aren't going to share those things, you know. Had a really bad day. I thought about, you know, my mom who died 8 years ago. Like, not too many people post those things. And it makes me think of that, you know, because you get these people who are trying to achieve this level of perfection and meet this expectation that they have for themselves that isn't realistic because they're looking at unrealistic examples, you know, unachievable things. I want to learn how to be more yourself, more of yourself for you, and stop trying to be like other people and stop caring so much about what the outside world might perceive and think more about how do you feel about yourself. That's much more achievable goal. I'm not saying there aren't things to work on. I'm not saying there aren't things to achieve. It's just not that false perception that's painted out there, you know. You know, someone might take a picture of a really beautiful Christmas tree they spent half an afternoon putting up, but they only put it up because they're feeling alone, and they spent the rest of the afternoon crying by themselves. You know, but all you see is the beautiful Christmas tree that they spent a lot of time on. It's not an accurate representation. You know, so what people let you see of themselves is not all of themselves. And to set that up as, like, who you want to be or your mold for, like, your goals is you're setting yourself up for failure because they're not human. They're highlights. So it just made me think of that, you know, as popular and as famous as it might be, will always lead to simple imitations. They themselves were imitations. So I do think there's some good messages sucked into this philosophy. So, and I thought this was really well done. I also noticed that the username is technically spelled Ernest, but I feel weird pronouncing it like that. So I'm going to keep saying Ernest. if it's not, feel free to correct me. But I really enjoyed the piece. Thought it was well done.
I really enjoyed your comment, too. I think you dropped some wisdom there. I agree. Our next poem is by Stephen T. Wellman, and this is called Surface. Sorry, one second. I'm just making sure I'm still doing to the right prompt. Yes, it is the same prompt. So we are still writing to how liberating it is to pursue wholeness instead of perfection. So here's Surface by Stephen T. Wellman. It is a pragmatic perception, an altered reflection. We look in the silver and only see a small silver sliver. All an optical illusion. We run to find seclusion. We barely scratch the surface, judging others by their preface. We never get past the introduction. We fail with the seduction. They run from the mess they see. We are all a mess. But is it ugly? An emptiness resides, fills our neglected insides, forever running in the wrong direction, misinterpretation of beauty as perfection. It is a fact our character and actions attract, not our image and looks. We are all books with a story to tell. We write poetry to crack the shell. As the chrysalis breaks, a butterfly awaits fragile flowers bloom, making room for a fluttering flight to scratch the fragile surface. End poem.
Well read, and really interesting in our interpretation of the prompt here, you know, with the surface. You know, it is a pragmatic perception, an altered reflection. We look in the silver and only see a small sliver. You know, when you're looking in the mirror at yourself, and you see your face, that's all you're seeing. You see your face. You don't see how smart you are. You don't see how kind you are. You don't see how much love you have to give. You don't see, you're looking at your face. That's all that actually reflects in the mirror. You know, it's not, you don't look in the mirror and say that's who you are. No, that's just how you appear. It's a visual appearance. And I like that it's, you know, then followed up by an optical illusion. We run to find seclusion. We barely scratch the surface, judging others by their preface. So, like, not only are we doing this to ourselves, we're doing this to other people. And, you know, you look at someone and how they appear, and you make a lot of judgments based on that appearance. The first one, for some reason, that comes to mind is, you know, like the older generation and people with tattoos. I don't know how many times I've heard some older people, when someone gets tattoos, being like, don't you want a good job? Not thinking for a second that, hey, maybe you shouldn't be hiring people based on tattoos, you know, but their ability to do the job, you know, or making assumptions about who someone is based on tattoos. You know, typically they don't really say much about who someone is. You know, even like a gang-related tattoo, for example, doesn't tell you who they are. It tells you who they were, potentially, maybe who they still are, but not necessarily who they are currently. You know, to make those kind of judgments on people based on any kind of physical trait, you know, at all. You know, skin color, height, build, you know, size, weight, like all of those things are such a tiny fraction of who a person is, that it's, you know, it's not something you should be basing something on, but people do it. I mean, I think just about everybody is guilty at some point of making some kind of assumption based on somebody's appearance. You know, stereotyping is a thing. I mean, there's certainly reason for it and cause for it. I don't think it's 100% erasable. But, you know, there are limits to it, for sure. And just to be clear in this context, I'm not talking about, like, racism and things like that. It's just, you know, you can look – I mean, like, things like you can look at somebody who's, say, 85-year-old, you know, and assume that they probably wouldn't be able to name, like, the most popular rapper of the 2000s. You know, like, not because of anything – it's just a generalization. And like I said, not even that, not ideal, because people can surprise you. It's flawed. You know, but then to take that and be like, and know that because you're seeing other people like that and making those kind of judgments about other people, you then reflect and go, well, how do they see me? You know, am I as ugly as I see them? Because I look like a mess. I do like that is posed as a question. You know, we are all a mess, but is it ugly? Like, why do we judge these things? Like, why is it so wrong to be imperfect? Why is it so wrong to be vulnerable? You know, and reevaluating that. And then begs us to let go of the physical, you know, to crack the shell, to get in there, to see what are people actually made of. Because looking at physical appearance is just the surface. And even when we try to look beyond it, we are just scratching at it. So I really enjoyed the piece. I liked the statement that it makes. I like what it's inferring. I think it's really well done. You know, when you look in a mirror, all you see is your face. And when you look at other people, it's the same. You only see a physical exterior. It doesn't tell you much about who they are. You make a lot of assumptions. So, well done, Stephen T. Wellman. I enjoyed the write.
I really love the comments that you made, Babbler. And when you were talking about sometimes when you are judging other people, not you specifically, I mean, like when people judge people, then they wonder how they themselves are being judged. It reminds me of I've just been working on this piece of writing that's inspired by Carl Jung's shadow thing, not shadow thing, his shadow theory, which includes projecting. So it's like usually when you are seeing someone and feeling critical about things that you don't like about them, you're noticing things that you don't like about yourself. And you respond more to things that you have tried not to be, and you see it in them, and you wonder if people see it in you, and you fail to hide it, and that's why you don't like it. So it's really matching the thing that I'm working on right now, trying to write about my own shadow self, and discovering how messed up I am, which I'm sorry. Sorry, okay. What? We echoed.
I was just going to say, the example that came to mind when I think about that is I went to a wedding with my sister, and she had just had a baby, like, a few months before. And she put on this dress, and she's like, do I look okay? She's like, do I look terrible? Like, can you see my belly? Like, do I look crappy? She's like, I don't have time to go get another dress. And, you know, all these worries. And I said, well, if you saw someone, you know, who had put on some weight since the last time you saw them and who looked tired and had a small baby with them, what would your thoughts be? You know? And she's like, mm-hmm. Well, it's probably because they just had a baby. And I'm like, then that's what everyone's going to think. Like, I don't know why you think people are going to look at you and think all of these horrible things. Like, I have never in my life gone to a wedding and looked at someone and been like, oh, my God, look at her dress. Like, she's clearly put on weight. She looks like hell. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I've never done that. Like, those are thoughts that I've never had. You know, so, like, sometimes I try to frame things like that. Like, what would you think if you saw somebody who looked like that? Then that's probably what they're going to think. You know, like, stop
judging.
Yeah,
we're harder on ourselves than we would be. So, yeah, it's good to frame it
that
way.
You would never look at a stranger like that.
No. And that works with a lot of things, too. I remember I had this one coworker a long time ago who her husband was treating her really badly. And I was like, if it was your daughter's husband who was behaving that way against her, and she was like, I'd kill him. And I'm like, there, you deserve the same as your daughter. So, you know, like, cause she was just like, it's fine, until she thought about it, like, in the context of what if it was someone she loved who was getting treated that way, and suddenly she realized that it wasn't okay. And sometimes you just have to see things as, you know, you're a person. You deserve the same as other people. You are being interpreted the same as other people. It's not like you're more, I don't know. Anyway, I'm getting off track from the poem, but that's just what my mind does. So I really enjoyed the poem. I thought it had a lot of depth. It made some good points. I liked they run from the mess they see. We are all a mess, but is it ugly? I've sort of learned to embrace my messiness. I mean, not my actual mess, which I am bad for as well. I'm kind of known for my messy desk. But I mean, like, is that the worst? Because I may be perceived as disorganized, but I'm actually not. I'm really organized. I have, like, my summer activities planned for my programs for the kids at work. Like, I plan way ahead. It's just I have a pile for each of my plans. It doesn't look pretty, but there's a method to my madness. And so is it so horrible that I'm a mess? Yeah, there is that thing of you're only seeing a small part of yourself. So I may look at myself and think, oh, I'm getting old. Look at that little patch of gray hair. But I'm still pretty useful in a lot of ways. So it's just like you're only seeing that little bit of yourself. And maybe you just need to get over that and think about the other sides of you. I really liked that he pointed out that we write poetry to crack the shell because we have more of a story to tell. You know, he points out that it's not about our looks, it's our character and our actions, and there's more to us. And I really like that he said that because I feel like I started writing poetry, or again, I guess, my second wave of writing poetry was because I wanted to feel seen as the person I am underneath, because I started writing when my aphasia was at its worst, and I felt like I couldn't communicate, and everyone thought I was stupid now after my brain surgery, and I just wanted people to see, even if it wasn't like the people in my real life, I wanted someone to see that I wasn't a complete idiot, that there was still me in here somewhere, and poetry did that for me. I mean, to a certain extent anyway. So I loved that he pointed that out, that it's not just a picture that someone sees on Instagram, that there's other layers to each of us and that we have different ways of expressing that. Thank you, Stephen T. Wellman. I loved that poem. Okay. Now we have a poem by Pee Wee Cusson. So this is our second one by him. The other one was to the previous contest. This one is to the prompt that we have been doing. And I think it's your turn to read. I'm sorry, I get lost
it is
in
me.
The... Okay. Thank you.
Okay. This is More Perfect Me by Pee Wee Cusson. Just like this. Our father pulled us close on that day. He said, listen, my sons, to the words I say. In the forests of the mind, enemies may take many shapes. Most dangerous you may find, enemy that goes by your name. If you listen to what I say, you'll find it completely true. And in light of another day, could be me or I you. Brother, we started many years ago. It finds us here again. As I, you, I knew, you are me, a foe that will not bend. And as I, you, I knew that there would be a day we must meet again, I had hoped, as friends. From the murky, shady, still waters I hold inside, time again now was time I tried to hold you so denied. We set out that day in cloud so as no one could see that I was you and you I. They all thought you me. And I'll say again what a lifetime it had been, yet as we set out goals simple and determined. Yes, as we walked away, I heard you wish for perfection that day. I did not know what to do. As a perfect me, I couldn't see. So I prayed not for perfection, just for a more perfect me. As this I could be, not perfection, a more perfect version of me. Now we stand here today, a perfect me I still cannot see, and you dissipate and fade away, knowing well it could never be. You thought yourself clever until life brought you against everything I strove to be, everything and if anything, not perfection, just a more perfect me. End poem.
Babbler and wonderful poem, Pee Wee. This, again, makes me think of the shadow self. It's the two versions, the conscious and then the part that is imperfect and takes on all those imperfections. All right. I'm getting into the philosophy sticking in me. I loved the warning about being your own worst enemy, especially the way it was worded, in the forest of the mind. There's this wildness to our mind. And the way you hoped that you could be friends with yourself, that your two sides could get along, but that's not always true. I tried to hold you so denied, and I think that's the rejection of ourselves, the rejection of the pieces of ourselves that we don't like. And then it's talking about, like, a cloudy day. So, again, it's that shadow, the whole shadow concept of, you know, we're in the darkness. We push away those pieces of ourselves that are not perfect. And I love the goal of being not perfect, but a perfect version of me. Because there's this fine line between, like, hating yourself and then being, like, super cocky, like, or, like, just accepting exactly how you are. There's so many of those, like, little, like, inspirational memes that are, like, you are not a burden. You are wonderful. Like, you're perfect just the way you are. Or, like I don't know. There's, like, this, like almost toxic positivity of, like, don't change anything about yourself. But that's not true. I mean, yes, there is value in everyone, and yes, you should, you know, see your own value. But at the same time, you know, work towards being as good as you can be. Don't just, like, totally give up and, you know, just be like, I'm fine the way I am. I like this because Pee-wee is saying, you know, work towards being the best you, the perfect you, the you that you are capable of being, and know that that's enough, that you are enough if you're trying. I think this is a really good balance there. It's something that I think is often lost, that, you know, accept yourself, but try. What did you think, Babbler?
Out just knowing that, you know, basically saying you can be your own worst enemy. You know, the worst enemy you can have sometimes can be yourself. I often say, like, no one's a harsher critic on me than myself, and if they are, well, screw them, because I'm plenty mean myself. Like, you're a real hard-up asshole if you're meaner to me than I am to myself. So, you know, but it's true. We're not good at being friends to ourselves. You know, we have unrealistic expectations sometimes of what we want for ourselves in our lives. And I think it does a good job of saying that, you know. And then it says, you know, this started years ago where, you know, there was a split in this person, you know, a split into parts of themselves. It makes me think of, you know, personas, like, you know, who I am at work. Right, is not who I am at home. It's not who I am in front of my mother, and it's not who I am in front of my best friend. And even who I am on this show or who I am online, they're all aspects of myself, but they're not in my entire self, you know. But none of them are fake. Like, none of them are fraudulent in any way. It's just, you know, I frame myself in certain ways in certain situations. It's just part of, you know, functioning in society, really, you know. I mean, certainly I'm not sending the same jokes to everyone. You know, it's not any less myself, but there are parts of myself that I have to let go of, you know. It makes me think that in this piece, because the one side wants the other side to be perfect, you know, that voice is the voice of perfectionism. That's the persona of perfectionism. You know, and to have been, like, born with that inside yourself, or to have it grown with inside yourself, and to reject it, to be like, no, I'm not going to be perfect. I was never meant to be perfect. I'm okay being me, is why that other person disappears, because it's part of the rejection of that. And then that's, you know, a form of self-improvement. I really liked your comment, Ephesiana, what you were talking about, you know, about the cheesy quotes and things that you see online. I sometimes can't stand them. I will say, to begin with, I'm not very good at accepting compliments sometimes, and I'm not very good at, like, I can't read those things. Like, I can't, the cringe in me is, I just can't. Like, I had it for the longest time, a hard time telling people that I love them or hearing that people love me. It just caused me to, like, grimace. You know, it's not that I thought it was not true or that I thought it was disingenuous. It's just, it felt very cheesy to hear. You know, I've gotten better at that in a lot of aspects, but still sometimes I still, if someone starts getting too sentimental with me, I I get a little weirded out. I'm not good at feelings. And then, like, I'm not good at physical affection either. Like, I'm terrible at hugs. When someone is grieving around me, I have no idea what to do. Like, I just don't know what to do. And it's something that I've worked on, you know, improving myself on. But at the same time, it's like, I can't read those quotes that are just like, you're awesome and you're perfect and you're wonderful just the way you are. And it's like, no, there are things about myself I want to improve, you know, including my reaction to affection sometimes, but not all the time. I don't think I'll ever be, like, a big hugger. You know, self-improvement takes work. Like, and that's part of what I like about this piece, is that it was like there was the disappointment when the part of themselves says, I want you to be perfect, and then the digestion of the fact that that's not possible, and then the coming to terms with the fact that they're happy and with how they are, and accepting themselves for how they are, and then that part of them is gone, which is in itself more perfect, you know, but that's a form of self-work. That in itself is a form of striving. So I thought it was really well done, and I enjoyed your comment on it as well.
I really enjoyed what you had to say. And I think that's also what I really like about this Life on Purpose movement. They call it a movement. But, like, the I did their initial worksheet, which is just, like, 10 questions or something. And it makes you think about, like, what you're good at, what you're bad at, and what matters the most to you. And then it's like, okay, so how can you choose one of those things you're bad at that relates to what matters to you and make that better? And it's like, you're saying there are things that you're good at. You're not a piece of shit. It establishes you're not a piece of shit. But there are things you can work on, and just don't try to do everything. Try to work on what matters. And I think that Pee-wee's piece really captured that.
Yeah, agreed.
We are,
and I do like that about this.
Mm-hmm. That's the last one to that specific quote, but we're still on Life on Purpose. But the next quote, and that is, practice showing up with presence instead of perfection, which is very similar, but it's just slightly different. Practice showing up with presence instead of perfection. And presence, not present, like Christmas presents. Presence, like you are there.
I would be a lot happier if my guest showed up with actual gifts. I'm just saying.
The idea is that you yourself are the gift. Now I'm being the cheesy quote. okay. I think it's me who's reading now. Present in perfect imperfection by Neutron Bomb. My swimsuit is quite snug. It clings to curves that bulge out in unexpected ways. Before the medication took hold and I became a ravenous beast, eating fistfuls of carbohydrates and mainlining lattes, I was lithe and with a protruding rib cage and a pronounced thigh gap, wild like a confined bull shark, I was ready to gnash and bite a chunk from the nearest sea lion, to expose a pulsing artery pouring blood from their chalice, a communion of the acerbic. The voices of an archaic army plagued my brain chemistry, consumed my waking hours, seized only by sleeping pills prescribed by a registrar with rickety training wheels and a leaking biro. Doubloons solidified my identity. The milestones I reached for pulled me under the surface of the undulating swell. Day by day, I suffocated on seafoam, and my legs were caught in fishing wire as the sirens called for me. Come, little mermaid, breathe through your gills. A psychiatric ward served as a haven for the self-imposed responsibilities, from the self-imposed responsibilities that come from breaching the ocean's surface on the coattails of a promotion which saw teeth sunk through jutted jaws, shedding incisors in my abdomen. Rebirth is for the clownfish that dither in the shadows of the coral. I will form diamonds from the ashes of my past, feasting on cuttlefish that swarm my fins. Dying is an art form that I refuse to idolize. End poem.
Well read, Apasiana, and wonderful write, Neutron Bomb. I really enjoyed the juxtaposition here of, you know, you start with my swimsuit is quite snug, you know, meaning there's been a weight gain, you know, they're bulging out in unexpected ways, because the medication that the person is on has made them just mad hungry, just the ravenous beast just stuffing their face. I particularly like the, like, mainlining lattes. But then you get the before photo where they're lithe with a protruding rib cage, like too thin. They were too thin before now. And they were angry at life. You know, the bull shark ready to gnash and bite chunks out of sea lions, you know, a communion of the acerbic, you know, just mad about everything, just unhappy and angry and violent. The voices of an archaic army plagued my brain chemistry, consuming my waking hours, ceased only by sleeping pills. You know, needing this medication to get their thoughts regulated, to have like these racing thoughts of just horrible words said to yourself at all times. And needing this medication that has made the person gain weight, you know, doubloons, you know, being like a fictional currency that exists on TikTok. It's like, you know, upvotes or, you know, just like that instant gratification, you know, solidified my identity. The milestones I reached were pulled me under the surface, you know, just living for likes. You know, that's and feeling validated by random strangers on the internet is not, you know, perhaps the best way to value yourself. You know, that there's more to, again, being a person than social media. Again, that's, you know, a highlight reel. It's not a full picture. You know, it reminds me of a quote that I've seen that says, we are a sad generation with happy pictures, you know, happy photos. It's not a good way to value yourself by what, you know, people outside of you think, you know, external validation from strangers, like they don't know you. You know, day by day I suffocated on seafoam, you know, just drowning in this, just drowning until, you know, you get put into the psychiatric ward, until you're given the medication that you need, until, you know, you're handed the tools that you need to become mentally healthy. And so, yeah, it makes you gain weight. It makes, you know, other parts of your life perhaps a bit unsavory. But, you know, this idea of becoming stronger, you know, forming diamonds from the ashes of my past, feasting on cuttlefish that swarm my fins, you know, like silencing that crowd. Dying is an art form, you know, being in quotes that I refuse to idolize. You know, you're not just living to die. You know, it's a less angry, quieter, more sane life. You know, the idea of not living to die means living to live. So I really appreciate the journey of this. It's, you know, like, so what if I don't have a thigh gap? You know, I have my sanity. You know, I enjoyed the story of it. I enjoyed also the, like, energetic and visceral language, which is something I tend to like from neutron bomb sprites in general. So I really enjoyed this piece. I thought it was very well done. What did you think, Kapisiana?
I agree. I really enjoyed it. I think it has a vulnerability to it that is really strong. It opens up about challenges, about the mental illness, but also the side effects of treating the mental illness. I definitely find I relate to this. My medicine 100% makes me like crazy hungry, and if I get like hangry now, like the crazy hanger, which I didn't have when I wasn't on meds. Not that I was ever super thin, but I think it's about how you have to choose your priorities. You know, it's not going to be perfection. Are you going to be mentally stable, or are you going to be physically a wonder to behold, and choosing your mental health. And then some parts of it made me think about, like, being super ambitious as in career-wise, too, and working yourself to the point of hurting yourself, that you've lost your dreams, trying to be at the reaching the surface on the coattails of a promotion, but you're a sea creature. You know, there's a call for you to breathe with your gills, to you know, enjoy the ocean, and you're trying to live in a world that doesn't fit, because that's where you're trying to get the doubloons. You know, the mermaid who's on the surface gets all the attention of the people who are like, ooh, a mermaid, whereas the mermaid's natural environment is below the surface. Dying is an art form. I refuse to idolize. I think that kind of goes with the burnout, like not giving into that kind of hustle culture of, like, you know, you gotta have an amazing job, but also have some side hustles where you're making money off of your hobbies, and everything is to make yourself like this, like, super woman person who can do all the things, and just burning yourself out so much that you can't enjoy anything, that you can't cope, and that you end up not being good at anything because you've stretched yourself so thin. I think she really captures the struggles of our time, and well, maybe other times too. I only know our time. I think she does a wonderful job at bringing to life and making accessible the struggles of mental health. Neutron, loved it. I just added it to the finalists, which sometimes I do during the show, and then I end up at don't be offended if you're not on the list yet. There will be more people added to the finalist list. I just get excited sometimes. So, yes, I was excited by that one. Now I'm going to put on the board one by Robert J. Tice. And, Babbler, would you please read that one?
Absolutely. This is Birth of an Eco-Poet by Robert J. Tice. Among those heathered slopes that flow down rounded hills towards the grassy banks, along the river heaving leaves round the crag and hazy bend, much wonder starts when meadows end. I'm blessed to meet this regal scene of purple surges, speckled pebbles, outcrops bearing ancient stone, whole mountainsides of evergreen, reminding me where I should stand. Not as a stranger who arrives to claim and name some perfect earth, commodify the natural, then harvest sources harmfully. I'm here to witness purity. The untouched world so few have known, this fertile floral realm of seeds, sown by free wind, unsullied well. If I just breathe, I start to see the flawlessness, ecology. End poem.
I think this is beautiful. It has such wonderful imagery. It makes me want to be at that place. I really liked whole mountain signs of evergreen reminding me where I should stand. It's like, learn from the trees, see how they're lined up there looking at the water, and join them. I really like that he points out, like, not coming to claim it, like, ah, this is a beautiful spot. It's mine now. This is going to be my viewpoint, and this is where everyone's going to gather and look at this place, and I'm going to make money because it's going to be my spot that I have a little stand and people pay to be here and take their picture or what have you. It's just going to enjoy it as it is. Not trying to pick a perfect spot and change it to be your idea of perfect, but to just enjoy it as it is. This really reminds me of a picture book that I read to some kids recently called Tidy, which has this little animal in it. I think he's a raccoon. It might be a squirrel. Where he wants to clean everything up. And he's picking up the pine cones, and then he's picking up, like, the leaves that have fallen. And he's like, oh, well, we have to, you know, make this forest perfect. I can't have any mess here. And he gets rid of, like, everything on the ground, which means there's now nowhere for the bugs to live or for the creatures to make their little nests or anything. And he's like, oh, well, these trees are looking a little scraggly now that they don't have their leaves. So he cuts them down because they don't look nice and perfect the way they used to. And he paves everything over because then the ground is nice and smooth. And then it's like, well, now I don't have anything or anyone. And it's perfectly clean, but not what I want. It's, you've lost all those beautiful imperfections that made it a good place. I just, like, love that book. I have to look up who wrote it. properly plug it. But this is a beautiful artistic depiction of that sense that sometimes just leave it the way it is and enjoy it for what it is. Not have it all perfectly aligned like a garden of flowers, but let it go where the wind goes, have the seeds kind of scattered all over the place. It doesn't need to be in a perfect line. End comment.
I like what you had to say too about, like, the cutting things down to make things more perfect, you know, like, and how that's not perfection. You know, it makes me think of the Joni Mitchell lyric, you know, they paved paradise and put up a parking lot. You know, you took all the trees and put them in a tree museum and then charged people to go see them. Like, it's, you know, it's self-defeating. It's like if you hadn't done any of that, and everybody could have enjoyed it. But you think of a lot of what this poem is saying, too, you know, is that, you know, it's not, it's putting meaning into things, you know, thinking of it in the, through the lens of the quote, you know, the practice showing up with presence instead of perfection is, you know, showing up to these places and witnessing them and being present in this moment. You know, there've been so many times where, when I get depressed, I remind myself that I don't need big things to be happy. Like, I don't need everything in my life to be perfect for me to be happy. The smallest things can make me happy. You know, just the clouds looking pretty in the sky can make me happy. A little flower growing in a ditch can make me happy. You know, so many things. And just the little things. It's really these little things that can just make my day better, you know, and then I'll go and I'll seek out those little things just to give me that little bit of boost and just get me through when times are rough. You know, but it's just having that presence, that looking for those things and enjoying those things and witnessing them and saying that, you know, this is beautiful and this is perfect, and it's perfect because you're admiring it that way. I mean, I'm sure if you get down on your hands and knees in the forest and in the garden, you can find, like, burnt leaves, missing petals, you know, all kinds of things that are maybe less than perfect. But perfection is less than perfect. It's just part of the way things are. And so, you know, becoming an eco-poet,
you know, because you appreciate nature and you're present with nature. And it's like, how could I want anything else? This is perfect as is without any change. I think does a good job of kind of taking a more specific and situational example of that quote. And I think it's beautifully well done. I enjoyed it very much. That was a wonderful write. So thank you, Robert T.
Excellent comment, Babbler. The book I was referring to was Tidy by Emily Grevatz. So just to clarify, so I'm giving credit where credit is due. Our next poem is to a different prompt from the same subject. So the quote is, most of us know what we value in a general sense, family, friendship, faith, etc. But how many of us have our personal values so well defined that we could say in 5 seconds or less exactly what we're building our lives on? So that quote is by Erica Lane. And the poet who responded to that is Opti. So I will read the poem by Opti. Is this meant to be? Such fleeting moments in time and all that we want, we can never combine the thrill of being, the wonderment of seeing, the excitement of it all will never impart in one single sitting. We are destined to return again and again until we are free, until we see riches or power cannot exist. If it does, then the world was missed, and it all was for nothing, futile and untrue. 'Twas not meant to be for you. End poem.
I enjoyed this write. You know, it's a brevity, but it says to me, you know, what will be, you know, if it's meant for you, then it will be yours. And if it's not, then it won't. You know, the thrill of being, wonderment of seeing, the excitement of it all, you know, you'll never absorb that in all one sitting. You'll remember it forever. You know, these are like the highlights of your life, the best times. You know, and if there's things like riches and power and things like that, then those are flawed things. And if they do exist, it's not good that they exist, because those things aren't meant to be. And if you don't achieve those things, it wasn't meant for you. You know, I would argue that maybe overwhelming wealth isn't really meant for anybody but the greedy and entitled, but that's a poem for another day. You know, the things that you're meant to have and the experiences you're meant to have, you will have. So I think that's what it's saying in this brevity. Beautiful and well done. What did you think, Afasiana?
I agree. It was a beautiful brevity. It has an interesting flow to it where sometimes it seems like there are rhymes that are not end rhymes, because it all kind of like travels over to the next line. Most of the time, if there's punctuation, it's within the first couple of words of the line that carried over from the other line. So it just keeps everything totally flowing. Very interesting style. I enjoy it. And I thought that it had a good message. We are out of time, so I'm going to have to carry over the last poem, which is by Peter Solway. Luckily, we did get to read his other poem tonight, so we'll carry over that last one. And thank you so much, Babbler, for being amazing with your comments. Pee-wee for handling the board and making comments there. Fill My Eyes for giving us this time slot. And also everyone who wrote for the contest. Keep your eyes open for more contests. Babbler has one right now. So go check it out, Babbler on allpoetry.com. Good night, everyone.
Night, everybody.